أم اتخذ مما يخلق بنات وأصفاكم بالبنين.
Has Allah taken for himself daughters out of those whom he creates and has chosen you to have sons?
وَإِذَا بُشِّرَ أَحَدُهُمْ بِمَا ضَرَبَ لِلرَّحْمَنِ مَثَلًا ظَلَّ وَجْهُهُ مُسْوَدًّا وَهُوَ كَظِيمٌ.
They believe, so although when any of them is given tidings of the birth of a female child, the like of which he assigns to the Merciful One, his countenance darkens, and he is choked with grief. They believe, so although when any of them is given tidings of the birth of a female child, the like of which he assigns to the Merciful One, his countenance darkens, and he is choked with grief. This verse fully lays bare the absurdity of the Arabian polytheists' position. These polytheists considered angels to be God's daughters. Their idols also took feminine form. These were the goddesses they worshipped. God berates them for setting up others as equals with him. They commit this outrageous act while they know all too well that God alone is the creator of the heavens and the earth. It is He who has made the earth a comfortable place for them to live on. It is He who sends down rain for them and has placed animals and cattle at their disposal. Despite this, they take others as objects of their worship, even though they know these to be created things. Furthermore, these polytheists are guilty of ascribing even divine attributes to created beings. They also ascribe daughters to God, whereas they resent even their births and regard them as dishonorable for themselves. They not only have the audacity to invest these deities with God's attributes, but also made them a part of His essence by declaring them to be His children.
أَوَمَن يُنَشَّأُ فِي الْحِلْيَةِ وَهُوَ فِي الْخِصَامِ غَيْرُ مُبِينٍ.
Do they assign to Allah one who grows up amidst ornaments and is not well versed in the art of disputation? Do they assign to Allah one who grows up amidst ornaments and is not well versed in the art of disputation? In other words, they allocate those that are weak and delicate to God and monopolize their claim over sons who are apt to act bravely. This verse implies the permission of women's use of ornaments for women. Such accessories are natural for women, as is evident from a variety of ahadith. Imam Ahmad, Abu Dawud, and Nasa'i have narrated from Ali. While holding silk in one of his hands and gold in the other, the Prophet, peace be upon him, declared, "It is forbidden for the male members of my community to use both of these." Likewise, Tirmidhi and Nasa'i narrate a tradition from Abu Musa al-Ash'ari that the Prophet, peace be upon him, allowed the use of silk and gold for the females of his community, while he prohibited their use for males. While discussing this juristic issue, Abu Bakr al-Jassas cites the following tradition in his Ahkamul Quran. According to Aisha, once Usama, son of Zaid ibn Haritha, sustained an injury and started bleeding. The Prophet, peace be upon him, loved him like his own son. In order to keep Usama in good humor, he kept telling the crying boy, "Had you been our daughter, we would have given you ornaments and dressed you in silk." Abu Musa al-Ash'ari says, "The Prophet, peace be upon him, declared, 'It is forbidden for the male members of my community to use ornaments and silken cloth, while it is lawful for females.'" Amr ibn al-As relates that two women who wore gold bracelets called on the Prophet, peace be upon him. He asked them, "Would you like God to replace these with bracelets of fire?" When they replied in the negative, he directed them as follows, "Fulfill your obligation and pay zakah on these." Aisha points out that as long as zakah is paid, there is nothing wrong with wearing ornaments. Caliph Umar also issued the following directive to his governor, Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. "Ask all Muslim women under your jurisdiction to pay zakah on their ornaments." Imam Abu Hanifa narrated the following tradition on the authority of Amr ibn Dinar, whereby Aisha had given over gold ornaments to her sisters, and Abdullah ibn Umar had likewise given them over to his daughters. After citing all these traditions, Abu Bakr al-Jassas writes, The traditions that have come down from the Prophet, peace be upon him, as regards the lawfulness of gold and silk for women are more numerous than those about their unlawfulness. The present verse is also indicative of their lawfulness. Moreover, the practice of the Ummah from the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his companions to our own time, that is, the end of the 4th century of the Hijrah, has been the same, and no one objects to this. Any objection to such matters on the basis of an isolated tradition is not acceptable.
وَجَعَلُوا الْمَلَائِكَةَ الَّذِينَ هُمْ عِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ إِنَاثًا أَشَهِدُوا خَلْقَهُمْ سَتُكْتَبُ شَهَادَتُهُمْ وَيُسْأَلُونَ
They claim that angels who are Allah's chosen servants are females. Did they witness how their bodies are constituted? Their testimony shall be written, and they shall be called to account. They claim that angels, who are Allah's chosen servants, the angels are beyond belonging to one gender or the other. This point comes out sharply from the wording of the verse. Did they witness how their bodies are constituted? This might alternatively be translated as follows. Were they present when they were born?
وَقَالُوا لَوْ شَاءَ الرَّحْمَنُ مَا عَبَدْنَاهُمْ مَا لَهُمْ بِذَٰلِكَ مِنْ عِلْمٍ إِنْ هُمْ إِلَّا يَخْرُصُونَ
They say, had the merciful one so willed, we would never have worshipped these deities. But they have no knowledge of the matter and are simply conjecturing. They say, had the merciful one so willed, we would never have worshipped these deities. They justified their error, pleading that had it not been God's will, He would have not have let them indulge in worshipping others besides Him. All misguided people down the ages have resorted to this argument. Their contention has been that if they took to worshipping the angels, it was because God let them do so. In other words, they have been engaged in this practice for centuries, yet they have still not been punished by God. This, they argue, proves that this practice does not carry God's disapproval.
أَمْ آتَيْنَاهُمْ كِتَابًا مِّن قَبْلِهِ فَهُمْ بِهِ مُسْتَمْسِكُونَ
Or did we bestow upon them a book before on whose authority they're holding on to angel worship? Or did we bestow upon them a book before on whose authority they're holding on to angel worship? In their ignorance, they believed that all that actually happened in the world carried God's approval. Hence, their polytheism too enjoyed His approval. Had this line of argument been sound, then not only would polytheism, but also theft, robbery, bribery, fornication, violation of oaths, and several other evils that are rampant among us would also be considered permissible. Nevertheless, no one claims such behavior to be good and lawful. Had the logic of the polytheists been sound, even these misdeeds should be considered as good and lawful. However, the fact is that all that happens in the world is not indicative of God's approval or disapproval, of His pleasure or displeasure. These are determined in the light of the scriptures sent down to messengers, which declare what is approved and what is disapproved by God. In the scriptures, God Himself declares which beliefs, deeds, and morals are pleasing to Him, and those which incur His displeasure. Hence, if the polytheists have any scriptural evidence to prove that angels should be worshipped along with God, they should produce it.
بَلْ قَالُوا إِنَّا وَجَدْنَا آبَاءَنَا عَلَىٰ أُمَّةٍ وَإِنَّا عَلَىٰ آثَارِهِمْ مُهْتَدُونَ
Nay, they simply claim, we found our forefathers on a way, and we continue to find guidance in their footsteps. Nay, they simply claim, we found our forefathers on a way, and we continue to find guidance in their footsteps. Inevitably, the polytheists could not produce any scriptural evidence in support of their beliefs and practices. Their only argument was that they followed what had come down from their ancestors. Accordingly, they took angels as goddesses.
وَكَذَلِكَ مَا أَرْسَلْنَا مِن قَبْلِكَ فِي قَرْيَةٍ مِّن نَّذِيرٍ إِلَّا قَالَ مُتْرَفُوهَا إِنَّا وَجَدْنَا آبَاءَنَا عَلَى وَإِنَّا عَلَى آثَارِهِمْ مُقْتَدُونَ
And thus it is. Whenever we send any warner to a city, its affluent ones said, We found our forefathers on a way, and we continue to follow in their footsteps. And thus it is. Whenever we send any warner to a city, Its affluent ones said, We found our forefathers on a way, and we continue to follow in their footsteps.
It is worth considering why is it that the affluent in every nation have opposed the prophets and preferred to cling to their ancestral faith? Why are they always in the forefront of the opponents of truth and seek to maintain the entrenched jahiliyyah of the day? Again, why is it that they are always instrumental in misleading people and provoking them to come forth with mischief in opposition to God's prophets? The following reasons account for this. 1. The affluent are too engrossed in their worldly pleasures to be concerned with the far-fetched task of distinguishing between truth and falsehood. Their mental sloth and cynical disinterest with questions of right and wrong push them towards conservatism so that they become supporters of the status quo ante. 2. Their interests are deeply interwoven with the existing order. Their acquaintance with the current system of life makes them fear that if there is any change, their dominance will be undermined and it will be no longer possible for them to act in contravention of the law or to acquire unlawful earnings.
قال أولو جئتكم بأهدى مما وجدتم عليه آباءكم قالوا إنا بما أرسلتم به كافرون
Each prophet asked them, Will you do so even if we were to show you a better way than the way of your forefathers? They answered, We disbelieve in the religion with which you have been sent.
فَانْتَقَمْنَا مِنْهُمْ فَانْظُرْ كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ
Then we exacted retribution from them. So do consider the end of those who gave the lie to the prophets.